Welcome to Minnesota Reads this morning. Our guest is Nora Murphy, who's written a beautiful memoir called White Birch, Red Hawthorn. Hey, Nora, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, Lisa. Thank you.
So let's talk a little bit about how you, the genesis of the book. Last week, we talked with Sarah Stonich, and we talked about her book, Shelter, which is another story that has to do with our roots in land and where that search and that thinking about our roots in land leads us. Yours is particularly interesting. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, land and homeland is really a central question that I followed throughout the process of writing this new memoir, White Birch, Red Hawthorn. It's really set primarily in 160 acres in central Minnesota, a virgin maple forest that my great-great-grandparents settled and claimed in the 1850s, and trying to come to terms with understanding and appreciating, but also recognizing some of the sorrows that happened in that 160-acre wood is really central to the whole memoir.
Because if I'm remembering correctly, your ancestors were dispossessed, in a sense, from Ireland and came here, and yet in so doing, dispossessed other people.
Oh, that's exactly right. Yeah, as potato famine emigrants leaving Ireland in need of food primarily, they understood what it meant to not be in your homeland. They understood what it meant not to have economic power, to have a loss of language and culture, language of spirituality, because they had lived for decades and centuries under British colonial rule in Ireland. And yet, ironically, the land that they were able to find ended up dispossessing the native tribes here of Minnesota.
So how did you, and at what point in your life did you begin to be aware of this and start putting these pieces together about not only the irony, kind of intellectually, but what do I do about this going forward?
Yes, in 1995, so a few years ago now, I started working as a grant writer at the Minneapolis American Indian Center in Minneapolis on Franklin Avenue. And it was, though I had grown up in Minneapolis and not far from the Indian Center, it was the first time I really was introduced to American Indian people and American Indian history and American Indian culture, which is sort of ironic given the fact that Minnesota is homeland to several Native tribes, including the Ojibwe and primarily the Dakota. So it was in that experience of working at the Indian Center and a growing awareness of, oh my gosh, I had not been taught everything about our homeland that I had, that I should have. And turns out I wasn't alone. Most of us who are non-Native don't know the true story of this land or state.
So the way that you chose to structure your book is fascinating. It's a collection of essays, musings, however you want to put it, and each of them has a tree as a title. Talk about that just a little bit, why you chose to put it together that way.
Yeah, well, I really was, again, completely fascinated and driven by the feeling of that maple grove that my Irish potato famine ancestors claimed and took down in order to create a farm for themselves. So I had this like ghost of the maples following me in this process and journey of relearning what it means to be a Minnesotan. And I realized that there were so many trees that were really of significance, and that maybe the trees themselves could help me understand this bigger picture of what it means to be in Minnesota. So I ended up starting so humbly, or just plainly is the better word, with the crabapple tree in my front yard, which was not doing very well. And so I realized, oh my gosh, I need to reestablish a connection with my crabapple tree. It wasn't just an ornament, but it was a living, breathing being that had taken such good care of so many children and families for generations. So you got maples, you got crabapple, and then I just started to see that there were so many other beautiful trees whose stories illustrated really important parts of the new history I was learning, the new stories I was hearing.
There have been a lot of conversations, and it seems as though in our culture now there are some lines being drawn, and sometimes they seem like really great lines, and sometimes I wonder about the lines, but it seems that there are certain kinds of art, conversations, music, etc., and who gets to make that kind of art, and who gets to have those kinds of conversations, and who gets to make this kind of music, and some people do and some people don't. And it's a sense that if you cross those lines, they're cultural lines, if you cross those lines, you're intruding on something that isn't yours to make art about. Did you have that sense as you began to write this book? Did you feel that you were grappling with any of that at all?
Well, I think one thing that I learned along the way is that while I really have grown to have such respect and admiration for the different traditions of the Dakota and the Ojibwe and other tribes in the United States and here in Minnesota, I recognized that they weren't mine. So I would never presume to write as if I were a participant in those cultures, but I can only share my appreciation for the native cultures. So I wouldn't write a native song, for example. I couldn't. That would be really inappropriate. So I think that kind of touches on what you're talking about. But the deeper thing was I realized that I was famished for connection to my own cultural heritage. And for whatever reason, many families like my own and many other European American families had sort of cut ourselves off from the root when we came to this country, be it one generation ago or 10 years ago or, you know, 150 years ago, as in the case of my family and the potato famine immigrants. So it was interesting because there is still a little bit of a tension around whether or not I can say, am I really Irish? Because the distance is so long in time and far in space. And that is where I feel like I have struggled quite a bit trying to claim Irishness.
I know that my father's grandparents did immigrate, and he knew them in his lifetime. And the idea when you became an immigrant, or coming here at that time anyway, was the idea that you would lose your accent as quickly as possible and you would blend in. And if you seemed too Norwegian or too Swedish, you were looked down on a little bit. The idea was to homogenize yourself as quickly as possible at that time.
Yeah, absolutely. And in a way, though, sometimes we were forced to do that in order to, like, get jobs. Our educational systems require that as well. But at the same time, then I think we lost our connection to our lifeways and our oldest cultural values. So there was a price to pay for that surviving.
Nora, I was really touched, and actually this is what inspired that question. I was really touched, and I'll wrap up here with the quote that Heide Erdrich offered about your book. She said that you have accomplished the difficult task of writing from what you've learned of people, not about them. She has learned to love another culture, yet understands it does not belong to her. And I thought that was those were beautiful words about your book. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Nora. What a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Lisa. I'm so happy to be with your listeners of Minnesota Reads.
Nora Murphy is the author of a memoir called White Birch, Red Hawthorn, and she is our guest this morning here on Minnesota Reads. Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.